You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, it certainly looks in markets like it's changed to sell in late April and go away. The all share down 1.85% today, the top 41.9%, industrials just over 2%, financials over 2%, with that ABSA news weighing on the sector as well. Indiscriminate was the selling globally. We see US markets deep in the red at the open, the S&P 500 down 0.8%, the Dow down 0.8%, and the Nasdaq 1.6%. We saw the FTSE 100 in London down 1.9%, Germany's DAX 1.5%, the CAC 40 in France 2.2%, and that followed selling this morning in Asia. Ness and Nair, portfolio manager at Sasfin Securities, what is spooking markets at the moment?
Good evening, Michael. You know, I suppose it's exactly what you said. You know, instead of selling in May, people are selling in late April in anticipation of a big sell-off. That's the only thing I can imagine. You know, on the news front, obviously we have the infection spike that we've seen now in India and in Brazil. I think that may have just started off the week on a little bit of a negative sentiment. But, you know, the mainstream news that have been keeping markets buoyant, and I speak specifically now of that big U.S. Stimulus package, hasn't really given the markets the confidence. I mean, the underlying commodities like iron ore are still very strong. I mean, iron ore up over 180 today. Yesterday it had a strong day as well. But didn't translate necessarily, you know, into higher share prices for the iron ore producers. So I suppose the market is perhaps taking some risk off in anticipation of the stimulus package maybe taking a little longer to come through. U.S. results haven't been that bad as well. You know, we have been consistently beating expectations. So it's very difficult to put a finger on what's driving this negative sentiment.
I tend to agree with you that it's preempting a sell-off in May, as we know that the old sell in May and go away is because of the Northern Hemisphere holiday periods as they approach spring and summer. And markets have run really far and really hard and really fast this year. So perhaps some participants just saying, let's take a little bit off the table. Because last Friday, we had that exceptional GDP print from China, 18.3%. Imagine if we could grow at 18.3%. I don't care about base effects or anything else, what we would give for that. But very interesting nonetheless. Looking at the big talking point today, and there were a few big talking points actually, but undoubtedly the biggest is the resignation of ABSA's CEO, Daniel Mminele. Barely 15 months into the job, he had arrived from the Reserve Bank, impeccable credentials. And the question is, why now, 15 months into a turnaround strategy that, if you look at the banks in their last reporting period, ABSA, for me, actually stood out as one of the better performers. So signs, Nesson, that that strategy was turning around. It was gaining market share in mortgages and retail. What are you picking up as to this disagreement between the board and Daniel over the strategic direction the group was taking?
Yeah, so, you know, when I read the FEMS announcement, Michael, I was a little bit surprised because, you know, sometimes you do run the risk of over-communicating. And they were quite explicit in saying that there was a difference of opinion in relation to strategy and transformation. And, you know, I just felt that whatever disagreements the board is having, it's sufficient just to say that there is a disagreement. You know, when you've got a person of Daniel's caliber, background, connections, you know, and you publicly state that you have a disagreement over something as relevant as strategy, you know, it just gave me an indication that perhaps ABSA is not, ABSA really hasn't found its identity yet. You know, post the Barclays demerger. You know, we do know that they want to position themselves as a Pan-African bank. That's certainly what they tried to do under the Barclays brand. For whatever reason, that didn't transpire. But right now, you know, being in the sort of, we still call them the Big Four, although I think Capitec's probably displaced ABSA, maybe even Nedbank in terms of size. But being a strategically important bank in South Africa, it's unsettling, I think, for a lot of shareholders to see, you know, so many CEOs coming and going. especially in relation to board disagreements. It's hard enough to make money at a bank these days. You don't want your board disagreeing over strategy and strategic direction.
It's so competitive. You need your board to be aligned. You need succession planning in place. And the history, if you look back at the last few years, is not encouraging. I mean, 4 short years ago, there was a very strange set of events that saw Stephen Van Coller leaving Absa for a career in telecoms, and he's now doing a sterling turnaround job at EOH. Very difficult job, that. And at the time, I think the CEO of the SA division of the corporate and investment banking unit, former Land Bank CEO Pakamani Khadebe, was considered by many insiders to actually be Van Coller's natural successor. Yet there was a presentation to staff, and it emerged that Khadebe hadn't got the job at the time, and it actually led to a group of black professionals staging a walkout in solidarity. And you just wonder, I mean, an episode like that, as brief as it was, surely must be lingering in the corridors of APSA like a bit of a bad smell, something that it has to deal with. And quite clearly, there were differences of opinion around, as the sense said, transformation, not only just strategy. So that tells you that the bad smell is still there. I just worry, if you look at succession planning, it's interesting when you go through the bios on the APSA Group executive. Almost all of them have risen through the ranks in kind of middle office or finance capacities. There's no front office experience that brings in deals and relationships. You mentioned Daniel's connections. It's not a bad thing in itself. But these are the kinds of people who are used to worrying about risk and cost containment most of their career. So how do you attract top talent when senior management have never had to worry about generating top line?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because Van Coller himself, remember, came from the APSA corporate division, and he was, you know, well known as a deal maker. Mm. But, you know, I hear you 100%, and I think you're 100% right. You know, the accountants, the administrative background or the administrative staff, even sometimes, you know, the people who are appointed in BE capacity, you know, really are not the people that can drive top-line revenue. And APSA has been struggling. I mean, it's no secret that Capitec has been stealing, well, the lunches of many banks, but mostly from APSA. And that's how they've managed to grow. So, you know, a transformation of not just, you know, staff or cultural transformation, but a transformation of a business model, you know, was also necessary to ensure absolute survival. And I just hope, I mean, there is an interim guy that's been appointed now. I just hope that they can find their way, because, you know, as you mentioned, in the banking space, things are so competitive right now. You know, I don't think you're going to see so many banks actually survive the next 10 years if they don't transform into a more, you know, technologically orientated business model.
And it's something they have been battling with since the demerger, even prior to the demerger, getting their digital UX just running better than it has been. Where, I mean, just ask any customer how difficult it is. You've got to go through 3 or 4 different clicks just to sign into your personal banking. And that's not the standard that's being set at the moment. We have the CFO, is it Jason Quinn, taking over as interim caretaker CEO for now. And it's interesting if you look at succession planning, because Peter McLaury probably would have been groomed for the role until his untimely passing. And we've got Wendy Lucas-Bull as chair, whose tenure comes to an end within 12 months. So those cupboards are starting to look pretty bare.
Yeah, remember Kennedy Bongani has also now gone to African Bank.
Yeah.
So it's about succession planning. You know, if you look at Bidvest, for example, Pumi Madisa was groomed for that job for many, many years. And when she took over from Lindsay Wells, you know, there was a smooth transition. Okay, she did take over during a pandemic. So, you know, smoothness is a relative term there. But, you know, she seems to have done a good job. She's doing a reasonably good job at Bidvest, you know. But she's obviously been ingrained into the culture of Bidvest. And I think that's what, you know, South African corporates that are grooming people for succession need to take into consideration, is that the individual, you know, must be able to endorse the culture of the business.
Yeah, I think Joffe and Lindsay Wells doing a fantastic job there and really making that transition as smooth as possible for Mpumi, and she is just outstanding in every regard as a leader of a very large, very complex organization as well. The other big story in markets today was around tobacco, and we always have regulatory concerns that see these shares go up in smoke from time to time. British American Tobacco ended down 7.6%. Imperial also down. Reports that the Biden administration here is going to be targeting nicotine levels in cigarettes and flavoring. We hear this from time to time, but very rarely do we see follow through. But is there more smoke or fire to this one?
Yeah, it's, I share your sentiments 100%. I think that, you know, whenever you see that the bad share price down 6 or 7%, you know, it's not because they're not paying dividends. it's because the FDA has come out with a new report. You know, that's certainly been the theme in the sort of past 5 or 6 years. British American, I mean, the dividend is still strong. They declared a 40 Rand dividend on a 534 Rand share price, which is where it is right now. You can do the math to see, you know, what you can expect to be paid. But for me, I think there's always these concerns. I think tobacco companies are an easy target for any administration, especially, you know, with the health concerns associated with tobacco. They did say in the report that they're going to look at lowering nicotine levels. It's been around a while. And I'm not sure whether, you know, people are going to have to smoke more cigarettes, you know, to get enough nicotine into their system. I'm still trying to work out whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
They might be selling more.
They also spoke about banning menthol. Of course, you know, these flavored tobaccos now are quite even more addictive than normal tobaccos. They talk about a ban. Of course, you know, Reynolds, which is that U.S. Subsidiary, has quite a big market share in the menthol market. So it's not the first time it's come out. It's come out before. But, you know, still the share price completely smashed it. They're almost 8% down on that news. Which I think, you know, contributed to the overall market decline there that we saw, 1.8%.
And Cell C announcing results as well. Blue Label owned Cell C still laboring under that debt burden and still busy with that recapitalization plan and program. It's almost as if we're talking about the country's vaccine rollout strategy. How long is a piece of string? When is it going to be concluded? But I may say that tongue in cheek. If you look at the loss, it's still a huge loss. But it's diminishing, and we are seeing some signs that the strategy is starting to pay off. The average revenue per prepaid customer increasing by almost a third in the year to end December. So some glimmers of hope.
Yeah, let's hope that number didn't increase because the number of prepaid customers decreased. When I looked at the presentation, because you know, it's obviously something that a lot of people want to follow. Given that Telkom's doing quite well, remember Telkom's results came out not so long ago, and you know they showed a massive increase in mobile. And of course, with what we know is going on with working from home and the increase in data, I would have expected better numbers. But revenue was down 8%. Okay, it was a year-on-year number, and they did spend some time showing that there was an improvement from the first half of the financial year to the second half of the financial year. But I think, you know, you must really temper your expectations when the first 4 or 5 pages of the presentation are dedicated towards the turnaround strategy, as you quite rightly pointed out to. You know, the results are never going to be easy. And to be honest, I don't know. I anticipate an improvement at some point in time in Cell C's fortunes. But, you know, every time I look at it, I'm often disappointed. So, you know, it's one that's going to be off my radar for some time now.
Nesson Nair, Portfolio Manager at Sasfin Securities, with your view from the market.